Welcome to this podcast from VCP 2014, the Vital Church Planting Conference. The conference is held in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, every year and brings together church planting leaders from across Canada. It is co-sponsored by the Anglican Diocese of Toronto and the Wycliffe College Institute of Evangelism, which is closely connected with Fresh Expressions Canada. We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com.
So what I'm going to be talking to this afternoon, and we'll have time to interact about this, is the question, how can church put down roots in the third space? That's the question I want to address. Third spaces, as you all know, they're not work or home, but they're somewhere else where people experience life and experience community. And what we're going to do, because you are congregational leaders, we're going to approach this from the angle of how can I, as a leader of a local church, encourage my church to put down roots in the third space? How can I encourage Christian communities to form in places that are not work and not home, and encourage church to take shape in those places? Are you with me? Okay. So, and we've got some handouts going around up there, which is splendid. Now, I don't know if you resonate with this, but often when I talk to clergy in the UK, and forgive me if this is not relevant to you, but often when I talk to clergy in the UK and we talk about Fresh Expressions of Church, they say to me, sometimes they don't quite articulate this, but sometimes they do, but it's going on in their mind. They sometimes say, you know, Mike, the problem is that I'm not really called to this type of ministry. I was called to the pastoral ministry. And I can do pastoral stuff, but I don't think I'm really called, and I don't think I know how to do stuff that's more missional, to encourage my church, for example, to get involved in some of these new Fresh Expressions of Church. And what I want to say in response to that is that sometimes when people say that, they have a picture in their mind of the sort of great gung-ho, extrovert, you know, over-the-top pioneer, and they think, oh, wow, you know, I can never do that. I can never gather hundreds of people around me and lead them over the cliff and so on. That's just not me. And I have to say, I'm quite glad it's not them, really, to be honest. What I want to say is that one thing that pioneers, whether they're lay or ordained, the one thing they need more than anything is good pastoring. They need someone who'll love them and care for them. They need someone who'll listen to them and understand them. They need someone who'll help to interpret what they're doing to the wider church, the church council and so on. They need someone who'll stand between them and the church council, perhaps, and kind of protect them from misunderstanding. They need a shoulder to cry on, someone to laugh with them and encourage them. They need good pastors. And what Fresh Expressions need more than anything are clergy who are good pastors. And what I want to talk about is how you can use your pastoral gifts to exercise what I call pastoral leadership, which will encourage these new and emerging forms of church. And what I want to suggest is that as a pastoral leader, the golden rule that you need to keep at the back of your mind all the time, the golden rule is that you don't have to come up with the answers. This is really important. You don't have to come up with the answers. It's quite all right for you to be thinking, I'm not sure we know how to do this. I'm not sure that I know how this is going to work here. I'm not sure how we're going to get started. Because the golden rule is to keep asking questions of the people you work with. Keep asking questions of your fellow leaders in the church, other members of the church. What do we think is going on here? How do we respond to what we're seeing and hearing? What are the possible ways forward? What might we do? What are their strengths and weaknesses of the different ways forward? You know, how might we start this stuff? Who's got ideas about this? Let's put up the different ideas. Let's start asking, well, what are the pluses and the minuses in these different ideas? Let's together come up with the answer. Don't carry it all on your shoulders. It's a huge burden to think, I've got to come up with the answer of this and lead these guys over the cliff. You don't. The great gift of pastoral leadership to the church is precisely that you don't know what to do. And that enables you to invite other people into your leadership to share your perplexity and your bewilderment and what do we do next. And that is the best thing you could offer to your congregations. In congregations that are pastorally led, change will well up from different places within the community, and they may surprise you. A friend of mine, he went to a church and in the West Midlands, and he found that he had to exercise pastoral leadership. They were fed up with being told what to do. And so he sat down with the church council and he said, what's going to be our vision here? And they put out some parameters and they said, let's ask the church for comments. So they asked the church for all sorts of comments on the possible vision. And then they had an away day together as a church council. And he said, I chose not to lead that away day. I asked a member of the council who's gifted in facilitation to lead that a day. And he said, I was very nervous. I kept asking myself, what happens if the vision comes out the other end that I can't own? But he said, you know, it was really interesting because this guy who facilitated the event, he too gave away his leadership. Because Tim said to me, it would have been so easy for him to have injected his agenda into that process very subtly, but he didn't. You know, the PCC, the church council, they worked in groups, they narrowed down the options, things came out at the end. And there was a great sense that God had been involved. But Tim said it was nerve-wracking. So yeah, surrendering leadership in the way of sharing it rather, surrendering not leadership but control, surrendering control, you're still being the leader because you're putting things onto the agenda, but you're surrendering control, that is scary. But if you pray hard and trust the Spirit, my friend said to me, you know, I went away on retreat. And he said, on retreat, this is what I learned. Church is not a project, it's a community. With projects, you drive them forward, you keep them neat, you set the goals, you keep them tidy. With community, it's messy. All the time, it's blurred edges. All the time, it's a little bit of confusion. And he said, what I learned was that I'm to be the leader, not of a project, but of a community. And that helped me surrender control. So as a leader, if you feel I don't know the answers here, then that's great because that's the first step to encouraging you to not give up your leadership, but to surrender control to the folks you share your leadership with. And when you do that, you'll find that change and inspiration happens from all over the place. You see, in Tim's congregation, this is what happened. Two women were saying, you know, we ought to be doing more to reach out as a church. And they kept talking about this, but they didn't know what to do. Down the road, a group of general practitioners who ran a medical practice, they discovered that if you bring your patients together in a cafe where they can meet together, then they become less lonely and they'll become less anxious and they'll show up to the doctor's surgery less often. And they were saying, how can we start one of these medical cafes? So someone who heard both sets of conversations in the church, she went to the women and she said, why don't you talk to the GPs and start a medical cafe? And that can be the church's outreach. And the women said, oh, interesting, interesting, but they held back. They held back. In a Bible study group, someone during the Bible study group said, you know what we need as a church is a cafe. Someone else in the Bible study group took that to these two women and said, come on, come on. So they went and talked to the minister, went and talked to the GPs, the doctors, and they've started a medical cafe. It's 1 year in, 50 to 60 people come, all sorts of games and activities take place, and they're now talking about how they can help people who want to take the next step. But you see, that change wasn't driven by the minister. You hear what I'm saying? It came out of the community through the Spirit. So where you give your leadership away, where you empower folks, where you surrender control, then you give opportunity and space for new things to happen. And the role of that minister was to be supportive to these two women who wanted to take the initiative to help them form a team, help them to take them the first steps. The role of that minister was to be a good pastor to them. All right? So if you're exercising pastoral leadership, how might you encourage your church to start some of these fresh expressions in the sort of third spaces of life? Well, first thing you might do is to encourage some experiments. I think the word experiment is better than the word pilot. A pilot assumes that you're going to go on doing it. Word experiment is a bit more tentative. Let's just try and see. If it works, great. If it doesn't, let's learn the lessons. So encourage experiments. And be honest, you know, some of these things will work, some of them won't. We're not going to be fazed by that. You know, really take the language of experiment seriously so that in your heart, and so in the hearts of the others you're working with, they'll be very understanding and tolerant and not fazed by experiments that don't really seem to work. Now, one possibility, one thing you might do, is to look in your congregation for one or two people who might start an experiment. You might look for members of your leadership team, for example, who sense that your church is struggling, who really are sensitive to the fact that you're struggling to get volunteers, that this church, as they see it, is kind of on the brink. It's not viable if it goes on as it is long term. There's that sort of dissatisfaction there. And if there are one or two people on the team, on your leadership team, who are thinking like that, they may be people to work with to start an experiment of what we'd call a fresh expression of church. There may be other people in the church you could work with who are really want to do something new. I had a letter about 6 months ago from one person who described her lively church and then went on to say, you know, all the growth in our church is just new Christians moving in. There's literally been only 3 new adult converts in 10 years. A shocking statistic, she wrote. A group of us are keen to be more intentional in our missional living and have been hoping, praying, and asking for new ways of showing Jesus' love to our neighbors, friends, and work colleagues. Now, if you've got one or two people in your congregation who are thinking like that, talking like that, complaining to you like that, then great, they're gold. They might be people who would start an experiment. Or it may be that you've got one or two people in the congregation who are naturally up for change. And they might be people you would work with. They might be people who would surprise you. I'm thinking of a hairdresser, and they were discussing in their church how they do cell church. This was several years ago. And she winced. And she said, oh, I can't imagine inviting any of my friends to a cell church, you know, where you meet and you worship and you welcome people and you talk about witness and then you do a Bible study. Oh, I can't imagine any of my friends being interested in that. But then she went on, but you know, if I invited some of my clients to come to my home and I did the praying for them, they would come. Really interesting. Never crossed my mind that a hairdresser might invite some of her clients to her home. So be surprised. You know, individuals are individuals. God touches them differently. You know, the Spirit never leaves identical fingerprints. So look out for different people who might be up for doing an experiment. Your leaders who know something is wrong. Your folks in your congregation who are dissatisfied with the status quo. People who are naturally willing to try something new. And I would then encourage them to experiment. And as you encourage them to experiment, I'd keep your fellow leaders in the loop. I'd just be very low-key about this, but I might say, you know, I've been talking to a couple of people, and they're wanting to explore how they can be more effective witnesses in their everyday lives. And, you know, I'm giving a little bit of time to them and helping them to explore this, because this is part of my job as a pastor to do this. I just wanted you to know that I'm doing that. And then a few months later, you might say to your fellow leaders, you know, those two people I was talking about, and, you know, we've been exploring together. It's been really interesting. I'm learning so much as we explore together how they can be more effective in their everyday lives as a Christian. You know, John, he's got this really interesting idea. He's going to be trying this with his neighbors. And this is why I'm really enjoying this bit of my job, because it's an idea that would never have cropped up to me. So what I've promised John is that I'm going to meet with him every 6 weeks or 2 or 3 months so that he can tell me how he's getting on, and so that I can just sort of exercise, in our language, a very low-key accountability. And you just tell your leaders that that's what you're doing. They're not going to complain, because it's clearly part of your job to be doing this. But they're in the loop. And as John explores and experiments, every now and again you just tell them what's going on. And you pray that as you keep telling them what's going on, you know, you drop a seed in here, you drop a seed in there, and gradually the penny will begin to drop. So you might encourage one or two other people to start an experiment, or you could start with your leaders and encourage from the front, if you like, members of the congregation to have a go. So you could involve the whole church. Instead of sort of going under the radar and finding two or three people and encouraging them to experiment but keeping your leaders in the loop, you might go above the radar, if you like, and invite the whole congregation to take part in this. One church that I know of, they did this. They talked about missional communities, which are a way of talking about fresh expressions of church, if you like. And they did some teaching about these missional communities to the whole church. And then they said, let's have a 3-month experiment. They thought 3 months doesn't sound too threatening. You know, it's only 3 months. So we're going to have a 3-month trial period. Any of you who would like, you know, can form a missional community, try it for 3 months, tell us what happened. And so in response to that invitation, this was a fairly large church, 300 people in the congregation perhaps. In response to that invitation, 12 communities formed. Each had a mission focus. 9 of the communities focused on the neighborhoods to which the group had a connection. 3 sought to serve a specific demographic: elderly people, children and families, mothers and toddlers. In one community, for example, a couple loved making cakes. And so, under the banner, what they called random acts of cakeness, they made gifts of cakes to people who were nominated by others in the neighborhood. So they'd say to folks in the neighborhood, do you know anyone who we could bless with a cake? And as people suggested names, they'd take round a free cake. So you see, they were doing very simple things like that, a 3-month trial period. At the end of the 3 months, these experimental communities reported back, and the church said, wow, these are valuable communities. And so they said, let's make this a permanent feature of our lives. People who'd like to be in one of these communities can choose to do so. And one or two more communities formed on the back of it, because people were so enthused by what they heard. And, you know, these are first steps of loving and caring and serving people, then became opportunities to share the gospel and to go a journey, see what the Holy Spirit did. So whether you go under the radar or above the radar, both approaches have their advantages. You keep emphasizing why Christian communities in everyday life are a good thing. You have to keep reminding people, keep reminding that God wants community to be, wants mission to be done in community wherever possible. Keep reminding people that God wants these communities to be visible in daily life. Keep reminding people that these communities are to be active in serving others and sharing the gospel. So keep helping people to remember what the rationale is for what they're doing as they do their experiments. So let's imagine the scene. You've got one or two people who are willing to experiment. What do you do next? Well, you meet with them to discuss four things in particular. The first thing to discuss are the boundaries or the framework within which they're going to work. People need a framework. They don't want a framework that's so tight that they can't improvise and explore and be creative. But they don't want no framework, because then they don't know what the heck they're doing. You need a framework. And I would suggest, going back to what I said in the first presentation, that your framework should be these four words. A Fresh Expression of Church is missional. You're seeking to work with people who don't go to church. This is very important. They're contextual. You do what's appropriate to the context. This gives you freedom and permission to do things that may seem bizarre to other people, but which work in your situation. They're formational. They have the aim of making disciples. So you're thinking all along, not only how can we love and serve people, but how might this become an opportunity for people not only to experience the love of human beings, but to experience the love of Jesus. And I'd be saying to the folks I'm experimenting with, why wouldn't you want people to experience the love of Jesus? So how can you introduce them to Jesus and for them to know that they are loved by the most important person in the universe? You know, that's such a penny-dropping moment when you realize that I'm Mike, I'm loved by the most important person in the universe. That there'd be something missing if I wasn't here. There's something missing from God's great vision for the kingdom if I wasn't part of that. So I'd be encouraging them to think about how what they're doing could become an opportunity for people to explore Jesus, and for it to be a place where they can come and be church, ecclesial. This is the fourth word, being church where they are. Not a step into main church, although people might make that journey, but more an opportunity to be church where they are. So first thing you talk about with them is, you might just offer that and say, look, do you agree we need a framework, and would that work for you? And who knows, they may come up with a different framework. You kind of have to flow with the Spirit. But you have that kind of a conversation. And then you might not be asking them as a question, well, now, secondly, who are you going to do this with? You know, you're going to experiment. One or two of you think it's a great idea. Who else can help you? It's not good for the man to be alone, God said. It's not good for us to be leading mission on our own. So who else are you going to do it with? And they may have an idea, they may not, and it may be a question of praying, and they may have to wait 6-9 months to pray to find someone who'll do this with them. So who with? And then thirdly, you'll be going to ask them how are they going to start? I'll be encouraging them to start with what they've got. Start with what you've got. Who are you? What do you know? And who do you know? That's the place to start. Who are you? What's the passion of your life? What's the central focus of your life? What do you know? And that you can build on. You know, Cook at Chapel, she knew about cooking. She loved cooking. Who do you know that you can reach and work with and serve in some way? I'm thinking of a person, and she worked as a practice nurse. Did I talk about this example? Practice nurse, have I talked about this example? No, good. So I'm getting confused with these different seminars I'm in. She was a practice nurse. Who is she? A practice nurse working out of a medical center. What does she know? She knows that that medical center is prescribing an abnormally high number of prescriptions for antidepressants to young mothers. So she knows that a lot of their young mums are suffering from postnatal depression. What else does she know? She knows that when you get young mums together into groups, often the postnatal depression subsides. Who does she know? She knows a minister who's got a house in the neighborhood where most of these young mums live. So she goes to the minister and he says to him, would you and your wife be willing to host a support group for these young mothers? The minister says yes, so these young mothers gather and they start to meet in the person's front room. Now, what does she know? Well, what does she not know? She knows that she doesn't know how to help these people move the second step towards discovering Jesus. But who does she know? She knows a friend who's been on an Alpha course, who had very little Christian background, but has found Christ. And so she goes and talks to this friend and says, well, how would you help these women make a journey towards Jesus? And the friend gives her some ideas, and she crystallizes these ideas into two or three options, and she gives these options to these group of women. Would you like to do this or that? Or one of the options was to watch a DVD of people whose lives have been changed by Jesus. And they opted for that option. And so off they went on the next part of their journey. But you see, she started not with a great blank piece of paper. If you'd said to her, oh, why don't you start a Fresh Expression of Church over in that new housing estate over there, where she got no connection starting from scratch, she'd have frozen. But she just started with who she was. I'm a nurse practitioner. What did she know? And who did she know? So that's what you ask. You know, these guys and girls who, two or three of them, are willing to experiment, you simply say, well, you know, who are you? What do you know? Who do you know? And you encourage them to start at that point and to dream dreams of what they might do and to go out and begin to explore and listen and to see what might actually work. And then you encourage them, fourthly, to talk about the journey they might follow. You remember those three journeys I sketched out yesterday? You know, the worship first journey, the relationships first journey, and the serving first journey. Maybe you just take those three journeys, draw them on a bit of paper, and you show it to them and say, let's talk about these three journeys. Which journey can you imagine would work for you? And they would probably, you know, look in bewilderment, and then you'd have a bit of discussion, and you might go around the hoop several times before they really understand it. And they might say, well, actually, I can't ever see us doing the first journey, you know, worship first. But it might be the second or it might be the third. I don't really know. But both those have something in common. They start with listening. So let's just, start talking to people around here and seeing what will work. Or they might go straight away and say, our intuition is that if we did this, something would happen. Random acts of kindness. Okay? So you get them to begin to explore the sort of journey that they might travel, knowing that that's all going to change as they carry on. So you discuss these four things with those who might be willing to experiment. And then you form the next thing, a learning community. Even if there's only one of them, if there's two of them, you bring the leaders together, or the one leader with you together, to form a little community that's going to learn together. And the key things about a learning community, whether it's got any one person apart from you in it, or whether it's got three or four communities represented in it, the key thing are the things I've set down here on the handout. You need to make sure that the person who comes from their Fresh Expression or putative Fresh Expression doesn't come on their own, but becomes with at least one fellow leader, preferably two or three. If there are two or three of them involved, let all three come. This is really important that they don't come alone. It means that when they go back to their community, they don't have to represent back what they've learned on their own. There are two or three of them who can report back. It also means that they're going to be honest in the group. Because if they say, oh, we've been doing this, you know, one of them says, oh, look, we've had great success, we've done this, this, this. You know, they know there's someone sitting next to them who's saying, we didn't do this at all. All right? And for these learning communities to function, you need honesty. So having two or three people there from the same team, as it were, ensures that honesty, also ensures continuity. If one of the folks is ill when the community meets, there's still someone else who can come. So you get them to come in twos or threes or whatever, and when they meet together, same format. You know, first time you meet, you review what you're there for. You set goals for what you're going to do over the next 2 months, 3 months. You tell the other people in the group what you're going to do. Off you go. When you come back next time, you report on how you got on with your goals and how you did something completely different or whatever. You report back. You learn from what other people's experiences. You talk about what you've learned from the steps that you took towards these goals and why they didn't work and why they did. What have you learned? So you ask them, what are we learning from all this? And then they set goals for the next time. Into the meetings, you might, from time to time, inject from some new knowledge. You might show them a DVD of stories about Fresh Expressions, something from YouTube or whatever. You might read a book together, you know, a chapter from a book, something that will help them to keep learning. So they're reflecting on experience, but they're getting more insight as they learn together. And of course, what's happening here is that they're holding each other to account. So the accountability becomes a corporate activity. You know, hey folks, this is what I'm going to do. We think we'll do this next time. And someone else in the group says, wow, that's interesting. How would you explain that to the church council? What would be your Christian rationale for that? What would be a biblical rationale for that? So it's a way of just keeping people on track in terms of staying faithful to the tradition. While you're forming this learning this learning community, at the same time, you can be encouraging support for these new types of church from your congregation. And in order to build that support, I would suggest that you do two things. First of all, encourage perplexity. All change starts from perplexity. We're not satisfied, we don't understand the status quo. And to encourage that sort of perplexity about the status quo, keep asking questions. Questions like, when our generation passes on, who's going to be here in church? How many people joined us last year from other churches? What would Jesus think about that? What about our experience of church? How are we feeling about that? Are we feeling good or satisfied or bad? Let's be honest. You know, when I preach a sermon, how many of you would remember what I preached on Monday, let alone for Sunday? Do you enjoy my, just be honest, I find preaching sermons really hard work. Just tell me you don't like them, please, and get me off the hook, all right? You know, give me permission not to preach at you, but let's do it differently, all right? So just keep asking questions that give them permission to be honest and permission to talk about the status quo and why they don't feel it's working and what could they do. But at the same time that you encourage perplexity, you know, Jesus' disciples work like this, parables work like this, don't they? They encourage perplexity. You know, whoa, what's that story all about? And you have to go into that story and begin to think about it and then interpret it. And there's room for different interpretations. So, you know, you're encouraging perplexity is doing the sort of thing that Jesus did. But at the same time, you need to balance that with hope. You know, if we're in a building here and someone shouts, fire, fire, and we can't see the exits and we don't know where to go, you know, some people will just freeze and other people will panic. It's no good as you encourage perplexity for people to start shouting, fire, fire, there's going to be no one in this building when this generation passes away. You also need to balance that with some hope. Are there ways out of this dilemma that we face? Are there possible solutions? And that's why telling the stories of Fresh Expressions is so important. Telling the other ones of what else is going on in Canada and North America, perhaps. And then what's going on in your church as some of these experiments begin to bear fruit. Tell them stories, show the DVDs, get people in to talk to them about what's going on so that they can then begin to see, yeah, okay, I can put alongside this dissatisfaction, we know church isn't working very well for our friends and us, but we can actually see there's some solutions possible here. And you begin to create a climate which becomes receptive to the possibility of new forms and new expressions of church. So there you are, encourage experiments, discuss with those who are willing to experiment, what framework they're going to work with, who they're going to do it with, how they're going to start with what they've got, the journeys that I might follow. form a learning community, and then encourage support from the congregation. And what I want to say is these probably are not sequential steps. These are things that you probably do in parallel, and they all get mixed up together. But I've kind of broken out the elements like that just for clarity. But in real life, these things will get sort of muddled together. But all the time, be a good pastor. Keep asking questions and get the Spirit working with the people to come up with the answers. So let's pause there and we'll look at my watch. We've got some, what time do we finish? 1:30, don't we? 2:30. So let's just pause for a couple of minutes. Just turn to your neighbors and sort of buzz together in response to what I said. What were positive bells that rang with you? Where do you have hesitancies and reservations? Where would you like to ask questions more? Where do you frankly just totally disagree? Mike Moyne is totally up the pole here. Just whatever it is, talk together just for a few minutes, and then we'll have a time for questions, comments, and some discussion. Gosh, my goodness me.
It's the honor of coming over.
Oh, I've so enjoyed being here. It's been wonderful. I've really
enjoyed
it.
You're having a good time.
Yeah, I'm having a great time. Whether they are, I don't know. But, but it doesn't matter. I'm having a good time, you know. It's been great chatting, Nick. It really has. And, you know, let's just keep in touch.
Okay, well,
you know, pray hard. And, you know, that's great. Thank you. I haven't got a card. I haven't got, but you can find
me.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. So keep in touch and let me know what you do.
All right.
We're brilliant.
Yeah,
you know,
terrific.
But terrific, and yeah, I certainly will. You know, lots of potential. Listening to people here, a lot of potential. So I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Whoa. Take care. God bless.
God bless.
Okay,
you.
Take care. Yeah, and Montreal. Just getting a small drink. Yeah, that's good. No, I'm fine. Thank you very much. Then we'll get back in there. How do you?
From the diocese.
Oh, nice to meet you, guys. Nice to meet you. Great.
The diocese of Toronto.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, good on you taking all these photographs. I think they're coming out.
And on the website and everything as well.
Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. Oh, what?
Have you been to Toronto before to do this?
I haven't done this conference before. No, this
is
the first time.
So,
yeah,
yes.
No, this is the first time.
The other gentleman, Joe something.
Yeah, he's been here before,
been
I think.
Before.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's been other people coming from from the UK.
Brilliant, right. Well,
quite a few people actually.
Yeah, they have.
And Nick Rutherford, have you met
him? Yeah, I know Nick. Yeah, he's great.
He's
a great guy.
He's quite often had workshops here.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So you're just over for the...
So I'm over for this one, then I'm going to Halifax for the conference they've got there.
Great.
So I'll do the Halifax one and then back on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah. But I'm really enjoying it. It's a great conference, this. I think it's terrific.
Yeah.
You know, really, really impressive.
You didn't, well, the weather's not too bad today, but it's
been
awfully cold.
Oh, it's been pretty cold. Whoa, I'd say better today, but pretty cold early on.
A bad weather.
Right, now, thank you.
I better get. We've
had storms, we've had flooding. Not the cold.
London area?
I'm from Oxford, which is sort of an hour away from London. So,
I was born in the UK, but I came over here when I was six.
Right, oh, gosh. Gosh, you.
Aircraft industry, but I was from Brentford, Chiswick area.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know. Very nice. Yeah, interesting. Oh, great. Oh, gosh.
So my relatives are still over there.
Do you come over at all to visit?
Usually on my way to France.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Once you've been to the south.
You don't want to go anywhere else, do you?
My cousin Nicholas lives in Twickenham, and he had a couple of his friends, I think. My other cousin, actually, his sister, they had a place in the Dordogne area in the south. Cool. I lived there for about 4 years with my girlfriend. She was from Normandy, but she was a resident of Canada.
Great. So now I'm going to get these guys together, but brilliant. Okay, friends, shall we come back together as as one group? Yeah, I'll see if I can do that again. Folks, shall we see if we can come back together? I can see there's a sort of rebellious element in you former colonials. Just say something that will provoke them to complete silence. Great. Okay, there's a chance for you now just to respond to what I was saying, take the discussion in whatever direction you like. So who's got a comment or a question or whatever they want to make? We'll start us off. Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Where we're starting from, and it's not always going to be sequential. We need to not try to fit people in the box. But if we're talking about growing spiritually, what might be some sort of signposts that people might pass through?
Well, if you are developing a fresh expression, then the sort of signpost you can put in can be quite varied. So you might have a signpost of kingdom acts of kindness. So you might say you've got a fresh expression that meets around a meal. You might say, every time we meet, why don't we take up a small collection or small act of giving where we can support a village in India that's trying to dig a well. So you might just start with things that are a bit outward looking, but that, part of the kingdom, but show a concern for others. Now, this is great because it not only connects people to God's heart of love, even though it's very implicit, but it also, many people long to do good, don't they? They long to be good in their heart, but they know it's so difficult. So when they join a group where, there's a group goodness, it kind of warms their hearts and softens their hearts a bit. And they think, hey, this is a great good group. Not only do we have great good discussions, but we're also supporting this really interesting project overseas. If you're on a new housing estate and you've got a football team or soccer team of different ages playing together, that team might contract to say, there's one person on our estate and they've got a child with disabilities and we'll support that home. So that's one thing you might do. Another thing you might do is to encourage what I would call sort of creative acts of spirituality, creative expressions of spirituality. And so in your group, you might have people who are gifted as painters or photographers or they write poetry or they do pottery or whatever. And often people with these gifts, they don't have a chance to bring these gifts and display these gifts. You know, they're kind of ignored. We meet to discuss, spirituality. You know, we don't meet to talk about your photographs. But you could be saying, you know, say it comes up to Christmas time. You might say, hey, I gather you take photographs. Would you be interested in taking one or two photographs that express for you what Christmas is all about? I gather you like writing poetry. You know, we've been talking about this sort of theme. Would you ever respond with a poem that expresses how you think about it? And you might encourage people to share those creative acts. Are you with me? You see, and what that does is to put, especially if you connect that creativity to some expression of spirituality, however bizarre, then that begins to build confidence, but it puts spirituality on the agenda. It enables you to start talking about spirituality. One person, in quite an advanced fresh expression in this case, used to have a couple, and he used to encourage the expression of different spiritual gifts, creative gifts, during their worship events. So this was quite far on. And one couple would come and they'd be sharing poems about cats and dogs and so on. And but they found that as they just allowed them to express themselves where they were at, then gradually these poems began to change and they began to talk about Jesus and some of the things that they were discovering in the community. So you might encourage creative expressions of spirituality. Third thing you might do is to encourage prayer. I talked yesterday about that language cafe where they'd the ethnic women would meet. They'd meet around an English tea and different tables. They'd have a discussion in English on a topic. And the breakthrough for them in their journey towards faith was when they put up, they described how they put up a prayer board. And then the women all started talking about their prayer requests, which then gave them permission to put topics about spirituality onto the tables for them to talk about, and then led to, hey, we're running an Alpha course. So you might use prayer, praying for them and being upfront and explicit about that as another signpost. You might include in one of your signposts praying for specific acts, for God's intervention in some form of healing or whatever. You know, someone described to me, someone in their mid-20s, we were talking about fresh expressions, and she said, they'd never work among my friends. And as we talked, she said, what did make a difference was that I have on my fridge a sort of names of people I'm praying for. And one day, this girl, my friend, called her Carol, came, she saw her name on the fridge, and she said, hey, Felicity, what's Carol? What's my name doing on your fridge? And Felicity said, I'm praying for your grandmother because you said that she's really poorly and you're really worried about whether, she would live. A week later, Carol came back, never expressed any interest in God, came back and said, Felicity, it's amazing, my grandmother has just got so much better. The way Felicity described it was, she went from there to there in a week in terms of her interest in God. There, God was not relevant. A week later, whoa, what is happening? So, providing opportunities for people to not only be prayed for, but to report back on what's going on and how God has answered prayer. Really important, because as people begin to share stories. So, for example, I sometimes say, if I was doing a parenting course. I might be leading the course, and I might say it's going to be a course with slight difference because what we're going to do at the end of the course is we're going to have a time of headspace. And those of you who believe in God, however you understand God, him, her, whatever, you can speak to God about the families that we've been talking about and the issues you've been talking about. Those of you who don't believe in God, that's fine. Just have some, think some positive thoughts about the people in the group, all right? And then, I would be praying during that headspace. I'd say, right, Jesus, I've done all I can. Now it's up to you and the Holy Spirit. So Holy Spirit, will you please come and bless these people and answer their prayers. Inform their prayers and answer them. Now, I really believe that if you prayed a prayer like that, God would respond. And so I'd be expecting a week later to say to folks, hey, how did you get on with that praying? Was there any results, any effects? And at least one person I would believe in that group would say, wow, this happened. So you get them to share their stories. Are you with me? And then another thing you can do is what I call missional worship. And this is worship for people who kind of half believe in God, but are totally confused about God, don't really know what they believe, but kind of have some desire to connect with the transcendent. And you put in little acts of worship that can help them connect with God. So you can put on little, you know, you might, you're going to serve a meal, you might light some candles and say, why don't we just be quiet for a few moments? You know, and those of you who want to speak to God, speak to God. You know, thank him for the meal, thank him for each other. You might, some of our cafes, our Fresh Expressions cafes, they've had sort of adjacent prayer rooms, you know, where they're lighted candles and so on, and people can just come and leave a prayer or say a prayer quietly. So you're looking for sort of elements of worship that will connect with people, speak to people. Sometimes in these cafes, they have a little guard slot, and it's advertised on the table. People know at 11 o'clock, someone will speak for 3 minutes about what God means to them. So you kind of put those elements in. So what you're looking to do is to inject all these different elements that kind of raise the spiritual temperature. You're also talking about your faith, as I mentioned this morning, in very natural ways. And then at the right time, when you sense that people are getting interested, you invite them to perhaps a group to discover Jesus. So, for example, a friend of mine, she was a pioneer on a new housing estate and had lots of different interest groups. And they were all meeting together. These are secular groups. And then she put on, for example, and this would be a kind of missional worship, wrap presents for Christmas. And dads and their sons and children would come in the morning. There'd be mulled wine and juice, mince pies. They'd wrap their Christmas presents, enjoy the social occasion. And then she would give a little 5-minute slot about the origins of Christmas and what it meant to her. And as people would leave, she would listen to their comments. And when someone sort of said more than, oh, that was interesting, but really began to engage in conversation that showed that they were quite taken with this, then she'd go back and visit them and then invite them to one of her groups to explore Jesus and then keep those groups together, start for 6 weeks. Do you want to go on meeting together? They go on meeting together and become a little worshiping self. So it's things like that. It's a long answer, a big question, but just wanted to give you a flavor of that. Yeah, for example, I think, I was going to say I'd act a bit dumb, but I don't need to do that because I'm just quite dumb when it comes to a lot of this stuff. So I would be saying to her, look, you know, so take the hockey mum, all right? And she's meeting with these sort of parents and so on regularly. I might be saying to her, you know, there's a really interesting story I came across in England. And these, they weren't hockey mums, but they were mums who were taking their kids to school, and I told the story of thirst. And I just say, you know, would something like that ever work with your sort of mums, your sort of parents? You know, would that, could there ever be an adaption of that? And I'll see how she responds. And she'll probably say, oh, no way. That's fine. But then I might just sort of, you know, talk to her later on and say, do you think your people you're with, do you think they have any longing to be loved and to discover God? And she might say, no. And I'll go on with questions like that to see if there's any spark there of interest in this. And if she's just not really very interested in this, I might say, okay, you know, maybe this isn't the right time. But I think I'd be looking, I think that you, in a congregation, I think you might see lots of people who could potentially do this. But I don't think I'd start with them. I think I'd start with the people who are dissatisfied with the status quo. I think that's where I'd start. So I think, you know, starting with a mum who's really quite satisfied with the status quo feels to me like hard work. You know, and you might then end up with a rather difficult relationship where it feels as if you're dragooning her into doing something she doesn't want to do, which is a danger for me, I think. So I'd be starting with people who are already dissatisfied. You know, your leaders who know it's not working properly. You know, people who are up for a challenge. People who wish the church was doing more than it is. Most congregations have at least some people who are complaining. So I'd look quite hard at these guys and girls who are complaining and see if one or two of them actually, behind their complaints, is a real opportunity. So I think that's where I'd go. But at the same time, I would be asking these big questions. You see, these big questions is, are we satisfied with ourselves as a church? If Jesus was here, would he be satisfied? Would he be pleased that after a year no one had joined us? How would Jesus feel about that? And I wouldn't answer that question for them. I'd just pluck it down into the church council and say, tell me, what do you think? And I might break them into small groups of threes so they all have to talk about this. They can't sort of hide behind the one person who speaks. But I'd get them all to start talking about this. Do you think Jesus would be pleased? And begin to get them to engage and see how they might respond. So, and it might be that as part of that sort of temperature raising of dissatisfaction, that then there's a young mum who seems totally satisfied with what she's doing. You know, as part of that process, you've told some stories about Fresh Expressions, shown some videos or DVDs or whatever. It may be as a result of that that suddenly the penny drops for her and she says, well, you know, I might be able to do something. Okay? So, another comment, question, remark. Yep.
So my understanding is for most of the churches, they're being on kind of a monthly or occasional basis. When I hear you talk, I hear it more on a weekly basis. Can you talk about the time frame around the church?
Well, yep. In the research I quoted yesterday, one of the criteria was that they had to meet at least monthly. They found that there's some correlation between those that met monthly and those that met weekly in terms of fruitfulness, but apparently those that met fortnightly, the correlation was weaker. Now I need to look at that more carefully and understand what was going on there. So some meet monthly, but I think most people who recognize messy churches are classic, you know, all-age gathering where they you know, have activities, all-age activities with the children, and then a celebration, and then some food together. That's classic, something that starts monthly. But then in the UK, people have all begun, and I'm sure in Canada too, started to become quite creative about things that you put in the middle. So you might have messy meetup, you know, where people just meet together. You know, no big agenda, but they just meet together. You might have messy spiritual evening where people come and, you know, you just have times of quietness and so on. One thing that one group did was baby massage and prayer. And mums would bring their babies, massage their babies, and pray for them at the same time. So you think of things that you can put on in between time. The example I gave this morning, you know, of people reading a passage of scripture for a week. Now, if you're a messy church, you might say to the families involved, you might say, look, take this children's story from the Bible. You know, it's an adult story, but it's also a story told in a book for children. And so you might just take that story, you know, the story of David and Goliath, all right? And you might say, why don't you just read that story several times between now and when we next meet and talk about it, and then during our celebration, why don't we just share what we think about that story? And what you're doing is then encouraging personal devotions, okay? So it's a question of being creative and finding a light touch ways of filling in the meetings between the monthly one.
Yep. I wanted to thank you for giving the permission that we don't need to know everything anymore. And it seems really redundant to have someone give you permission, but I think that's a really important aspect. And I speak to that from the perspective of one of my apprehensions in coming to this conference is a lot of my experience with Fresh Expressions have been churches trying to boutique themselves into sustainability, meaning they're grabbing from other congregations that are mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a surprise that the rest of the church doesn't present it the same way. But it's also happiness to know that there are people that are willing to go and come and go and come. And if there's learning, it continues.
Right.
So thank you.
Great. Well, thank you for that. And there's nothing I can really add to it. You kind of said it. It's brilliant. Great summary, really. You know, why did I do the seminar? You could have done the seminar. So that's fantastic. Great. Thank you.
I was just wondering, and it was something that you said that triggered this question for me, and reflecting on my own sort of experience, but have you ever been in a church where you've had to take a journey with just the parishioners there and getting them more comfortable with talking about Jesus and who he is and like in God's role and place in their life? I find so many times, the only time I ever really talk about God is actually during the church service. And then outside of that, it's almost like there is no discussion of God. And I think it was, we were talking about having a meeting and saying, would Jesus be pleased with what we're doing? And I would find, in many of the churches I've been in, the leadership would never even come up with that. And matter of fact, I've even heard parishioners say things like, we're Anglican, we don't talk about that, we don't say things that way. And I'm wondering, can you explain that journey and that process and how we can get people to start moving as a congregation spiritually deeper when we're not on that level yet, where it's still more of a superficial level?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And you might start, I might start, I'm just thinking of this at the top of my head, really. But maybe when I arrived, perhaps in the new year, I might say, I want to visit you, as many of you as I can in your homes. I just want to talk with you. You tell me what your experience of the Christian faith is. I kind of wish I'd done this more when I was in a parish. And first of all, you might be surprised. They might have richer devotional lives than one realizes. But I'd just have those one-to-one conversations. I might possibly structure it around some liturgy if I could find a bit of liturgy that would work, you know, I don't know. But anyway, I'd just have conversations with them that allows them just to talk about where they're at, you know. And I'd start with the language that they would use. So why do you come to church? What does church mean to you? You know, where does God fit into this? What language do you use for God? Do you use language of God, Jesus Christ, your Lord? You know? When I went to my parish, I used to use the language of Father God, but they hated that for some reason. So you kind of just, you know, so I'd be, one, A, it would be great learning for me as a priest, but, you know, you'd do that. And I think on the basis of those conversations, I'm a great believer in just starting with twos and threes. So it might be that you identify three or four or five people who you think, gosh, they could make a journey to be more explicit about their faith, perhaps to experience Jesus more deeply. And I might then say, why don't we meet together? You know, every 2-3 weeks, you know, for a limited period of time. I might walk a journey with them, do some Bible study with them, you know, help them explore. Maybe take them on an alpha course, if that works in your tradition. You know, and if they did the alpha course and they enjoyed it, then I might say, okay, should we do the alpha course for other people in our congregation? And they would become your core, and then you might do that for other people in the congregation. And so you're helping them to, you know, my experiences in the church where I was, which was the sort of middle Anglican church, and there was a lot of central churchmanship in the, you know, family, parish Eucharist was the heart of what we did, and then we had other evangelical things around it. You know, I think for a lot of them, they've never really been taught the gospel. They don't have all these gospel readings, they haven't a clue what they mean. So, you know, some very simple introduction to the basics of the Christian faith, to taking them through, perhaps using the Alpha Weekend. You know, you begin after a while, you begin to sort of, the atmosphere will begin to change in the congregation. And then you might, as you're doing this, continuing to do this in an inherited church, then you might be identifying one or two of those who might start a fresh expression of church. But, you know, something like that. Yeah. One more question and we'll need to stop. Yes, thank you. So in that situation, the minister, the pastoral minister's role is quite important, because you can be talking about what's going on. And you might just say, you know, you might say to the congregation one Sunday, you know, I've just been aware for the last few months that there are four or five really interesting things going on in different corners of the church, and most of us don't realize it. So I just want to sort of tell you, for the next 4 weeks, I'm just going to take one of those things and talk to you about what's happening. Might just do that. If the person is someone who you could interview and would not be over enthusiastic and frighten them all off, then I would interview that person. So, you know, do different ways for, you know, for according to what works. And that way you're beginning to communicate. Very important that you keep talking about the results of these experiments, at the, you know, and the results of the good things that are going on. So, you know, as a minister, you're free to do that. So that might be something you could think of. Yeah. Well, So, you know, there's obviously issues there which your church, I'm sure, will address. Yeah. But a lot of churches have communication problems. So at least you can take comfort from the fact you're not alone in that. And we will have communication problems if I carry on much longer, because Ryan's going to get really cross with me. So let me just pray for you all, and then we'll call it a day. Father, I want to thank you for the calling of each person here. And I pray that you would bless them, not only this afternoon as they pray and network together, but when they go back to their churches, that you'd be with them. I pray specifically that in the week ahead, each of the folks here would have one encouragement, an encouragement from you. And I pray that for those who feel the calling to be a pastoral leader in this whole area of fresh expressions, that you would find ways of confirming that call and helping them to take the next step. Father, thank you that you love us deeply from the bottom of your hearts. And I pray that each of us here would just wallow in that love and feel blessed by your affirmation of us. In Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, off you go.
We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com.